I learned a valuable life lesson this week. Or better, I should say, I relearned it because it's something that I think we all know on some level, but we don't always articulate it, and it actually has a daily impact on our lives and also the lives of the people we are close to. But in order to frame it, I want to put it in the context of the parsha by taking you back to last week when we had at the Torah class Leon Wieseltier, who guest taught, and he decided to take as his subject Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the wilderness. And in the Jewish tradition, you may or may not know that the generation of the wilderness has sort of two different profiles. On the one hand, in Jeremiah, they're thought of as the pristine, the beautiful generation, that they followed me like a bride in the wilderness, says the prophet, because this was the time when life wasn't complicated by building a civilization, by building courts. It was just God and the people in the wilderness. And wasn't that a beautiful age? But at the same time, there's a very negative image of the generation of the wilderness, especially in rabbinic literature, and you can understand why. Look what they did. They built the golden calf. This is the generation who, having witnessed the miracles that liberated them from Egypt, as soon as they get out into the wilderness, what do they say? We have no meat. They have manna, which tastes like anything they want, but that's not good enough. They want to see the meat. So God sends quails. They complain they don't have water. God sends water. They complain they don't like Moses' leadership, and they rebel. They're constantly dissatisfied with what they have. And Wieseltier, in explaining this, said, rather than saying these are miserable people and bad, ungrateful, wretched people, he said, they're infants. But the reason they're infants is because they have been systematically infantilized. First of all, what is a slave? A slave is a child. A slave is someone whose needs are taken care of and who is ordered around and does whatever the parent or slave master tells them to do. So he said, you have a nation that has been for hundreds of years infantilized. You bring them out into the wilderness, and do they have to fight for what they've got? No. God splits the sea for them, brings them across, drowns the Egyptians, gives them manna. They don't have to work for their food. They're given their food. And everything they want in the fashion of children, rather than working for it, they just say, gimme. And God gives them. Those of you who were here earlier when I told the story of the Magid of Dubna, the story about the idea of the minister who goes to the king and says, I want you to fire me because every time my son does something wrong, he counts on the fact that you're going to pardon me because I'm your minister, and the only way to get him to grow up is for you to fire me so he'll know he's on his own. That applies to what Wieseltier is saying about the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the wilderness. They could always count on God, so they never grew up. And they acted like infants, but it wasn't really their fault. Now, why do I bring all this up? Because one of the things that he did was he twisted the usual vision of the Israelites of the wilderness from condemnation to understanding. Rather than saying, oh, look at these miserable people, look at everything God did for them, and they build a golden calf, and they complain about the meat, and they complain about this, he said, listen, understand. Why are they this way? What forces have shaped them? And I had a couple experiences this week where in conversations with people, they said to me, so-and-so did something to me, and they were trying to hurt me. And I tried to put a more positive construction on what the person had done. I said, maybe they weren't trying to hurt you. Maybe they had a good intention. Maybe this was the idea or that was the idea. And the response in both cases was the same. They said, Rabbi, what do you think, I'm stupid? And it all of a sudden hit me. We associate seeing bad motivations with intelligence. And we associate seeing good motivations with stupidity. When you say, oh, I'm sure the person meant well, what do you say? You're stupid and naive. When you say, aha, this is what he was trying to do, you say, ah, you're insightful and smart. When we say seeing through someone, it's always negative. Nobody says, ah, I saw through that, and in fact, you were trying to help me. It's always, I saw through that, and you were trying to do something bad. Because from Freud onward, every time we think we see deeper, it's always negative. And we're so afraid of the idea of being played for a sucker, or what they call in Israel a friar, that we assume that if you're really smart and really insightful, then you will realize that everybody else is trying to take advantage of. That was deliberate, that cell phone. Someone planned it to go off now to interrupt my sermon, to throw off my rhythm. I know that. But the reason I brought up Wieseltier at the beginning is because he gave a positive construction to Dor HaMidbar. And in order to do that, in order to see someone else's motivation in a positive light, it takes imagination and empathy and insight and kindness, which are attributes of intelligence. People who see other people in a positive light, they're not less intelligent. They, in fact, may be much more understanding because, let me tell you something about the reverse. When someone does something miserable, something unkind, something cruel, and you say to them, why did you do that? They always have a good reason. I meant it for the best. Always they say that. Nobody says, ah, because I was going to be cruel and evil. So in other words, when we have insight into others' motivations, they're always bad, but when we have insight into our own, they're always kind. And we say, if only the person would really understand me, if they would take the time to understand what I really meant, they would see that I meant it for good. And by the way, that is often the case. It's often the case. It's just that we don't attribute that to others. So for example, the vast majority of policies that you disagree with, depending on whether you're on the right or the left, I don't care, the people on the other side really think they're good. They really do. They're not doing it because they want to destroy the world. They think they're good. And the arguments that we have tend always to attribute not bad actions, but evil motives. And evil motives exist in the world. We all know they exist. But I have a suspicion that we find them more often than we should because we think it makes us smart. And we don't only do it in grand policy questions, we do it with one another. I know you meant to hurt me. That's why you said that. That's why you did it. You can't fool me. Nobody ever says it the other way. I know you were pretending to be mean, but you were really nice. You can't fool me. But it is possible, and it does happen. And a little bit of empathy and insight, which again are qualities of intelligence, would help us see people better. Let me just close with a beautiful story that I've told and Joseph Telushkin told the other night when he was here, those of you who were here, and it was a great treat, and if not, you should really listen to his talk on the website, heard him tell this wonderful story of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim was probably the most famous rabbi in the world in his time, but as Rabbi Telushkin pointed out, it was the time right before, in order to be famous, you also had to be recognizable. People didn't know what he looked like because there wasn't, I mean, there was photography, but very little. There wasn't television, there wasn't video. I mean, people didn't know. It wasn't like the Chafetz Chaim could walk down the street, no one would know who he was, but everybody knew who the Chafetz Chaim was. So once, he was on a train, going to give a lecture in a town in Poland. And across, sitting across from him was another Jew, so they got to talking. So Chafetz Chaim says to him, "Where are you going?" The guy says, "I'm going to hear a lecture by the great, the sainted, the brilliant, the wonderful Chafetz Chaim." So he's embarrassed. He doesn't know what to say. He doesn't want to say, "Oh, it happens, I happen to be the Chafetz Chaim." So what does he say? He says, "Oh, you know, he's not so great. Really, he's not so great." See how the Jew is deeply offended and slaps his mouth. Says, "You may not speak about a tzaddik like that, a righteous man." They get to the town. He goes to the lecture, and there's the guy he hit in the train, is the Chafetz Chaim. And he comes up to him and he says, "Oh my God, I don't even know what to say. I'm so sorry." And the Chafetz Chaim said, "Don't be sorry." He said, "After all, you were saying nice things about me." He said, "But also you taught me a great lesson. Not only are you not allowed to say bad things about other people, you shouldn't speak badly of yourself." Now just imagine the opportunity that the Chafetz Chaim had there for resentment and to make the other guy feel bad because he had hit him. But he chose to see it as good, as positive. He was trying to say something and teach me something, some of which he knew, some of which he didn't. Now let me tell you, the Chafetz Chaim was a brilliant, brilliant man. He was nobody's fool. And he understood what it was to have bad motivations. But he also understood what it was to see bad motivations where they don't exist. So a little bit more kindness, a little bit more intelligence, a little bit more of the words of Shammai, who says in the Mishnah, in Pirkei Avot, that you should dan l'kaf zchut, you should always try to see somebody's motivations more positively. And that was Shammai who said that, who's generally considered the more severe, the more difficult of the two, of Hillel and Shammai. It really could make a difference. It really is possible that the person against whom you hold a grudge didn't actually mean to hurt you, just as you, I hope, didn't mean to hurt them. If we were a little kinder, a little softer, and a little smarter, we'd be a little more like the Chafetz Chaim, and the world would be a little better. Shabbat Shalom.